Do you want your middle school girl to grow into a strong, confident, and resilient young adult? So do I. The only thing is, middle school's hard for both kids and parents. Welcome to the Raising Middle School Girls podcast. I'm Janice Scholl, and I'm just a regular parent on a mission to uncover the best tips and advice for raising middle school girls. Hey there, parents. Janice Scholl here, and I am having the pleasure of speaking with Phyllis Fagel today. Phyllis is a nationally board-certified school counselor, a psychotherapist who works with children and teens in private practice, and an author and journalist. She's also a mom of three. She's the author of Middle School Matters, The 10 Key Skills Kids Need to Thrive in Middle School and Beyond, and How Parents Can Help. And she just published her newest book, Middle School Superpowers, Raising Resilient Tweens in Turbulent Times. And I am so excited to have her here. I read Middle School Matters years ago, and it was really my first book of help for parenting middle schoolers. Welcome, Phyllis.
Thank you. And that's nice to hear.
Yes. It was like, wait a minute, someone actually wrote about this age group. I'm so happy. What I really valued about Middle School Matters is that you helped me understand the psyche, if you will, of the middle schooler, but also gave like actionable tips for parents on what we could do to support our kids through this kind of complex age range. Can you tell us a little bit about Middle School Superpowers and what drove you to write this next book?
Sure. When I wrote Middle School Matters, it was on the heels of actually being a middle school counselor for the first time. I had a couple kids in middle school at the time, and I was really looking for a what to expect when you're expecting a middle schooler book myself, something I could use at work and at home, and it didn't exist. That's where Middle School Matters came from. And then I was done. That was the only book I would write about middle school, or so I thought. What we know now is that the pandemic and everything that's happened in the last several years has created what I call an extreme tween. It's the same middle schoolers we've always had to work with or raise, but only more so. So they're more insecure. They're more socially clumsy. They're more desperate for reassurance. They're more disorganized. Their stamina is down. And all of this doesn't just create anxiety for the kids, it creates a lot of anxiety for the parents. So when I wrote Middle School Superpowers, I was looking for a set of strategies that would work with the extreme tweens, with the understanding that anything that works with a kid in the midst of growing up in such a turbulent time is going to work with kids all of the time. And that's where this book came from. What are the skills and strengths kids need to thrive no matter what's going on in their bodies or in the world?
Yeah. So that term really like paints a picture, extreme tween. I like it. And it helps me understand. I think a lot of us parents have felt things are different, but nobody's really putting it in that context. We hear, yeah, maybe they need to work on their social skills, but we're not really getting the full picture that kids are more extreme. Help me understand what you were seeing in your practice and kind of how this is manifesting.
If you walk into a middle school building, and I do want to say that I think things are starting to get a bit better, but they're still not back to where they were before. And it wasn't like things were easy before. This is a tough age, even in the best of times. And what we saw in more recent years is a crop of kids who had a harder time making good choices, self-regulating, recognizing what's going on in their internal life, understanding how to pace themselves, have balance between their online lives and their offline lives, for instance, all of which now bleed together. They suddenly had an inability to do the same number of activities that they did before. And that came as a surprise to parents. And all of this is, of course, happening at a time when kids are naturally pulling away from parents anyway. Their feelings vocabulary is somewhat limited. They have a hard time asking for help. And that can lead parents to feel kind of helpless or shut out. And when you see your kids struggling even more than you might have expected, given the phase, even if you were expecting it to be difficult, I think that creates a tremendous amount of anxiety. And don't forget, parents too are not the same as they were 6 years ago.
is this something that will naturally kind of work itself out over the next few years? How much of it is kind of the new world also that we've transitioned into after COVID?
Both, yes, and I think that we have a whole generation of kids who did miss out on a lot of significant milestones. And so there's that delay and they're catching up and they're maybe even more desperate to make up for lost time. So the social needs are even greater. And I think that will take a long time to play out. I think we will get through it and move through it faster if we really focus on teaching kids the skills they need that maybe they missed out on. Sometimes we go straight to mental health as the underlying cause. We say they have anxiety or we say they have depression, when what we might actually be looking at is a kid who doesn't know how to connect or a kid who is afraid to admit that they made a mistake or doesn't have the skills to go ask a teacher for help. And we can actually really tamp down their anxiety if we target whatever it is that they need to work on.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you brought this up because I think in today's day and age, there's a lot of self-diagnosing and we have the benefit of being able to learn so much versus years past, right? But there are so many people out there talking about anxiety and it seems like it's the immediate response. And we both know, right, that there are so many kids who do truly have anxiety and more so than in the past. But a lot of times being able makes that anxiety go away. And so you're giving kids the ability to be able in middle school to kind of deal with all of these turbulent times, as you call them. And I like that. Somebody else kind of uses the term tricky, which I like, and turbulent. It's challenging. I like that you admit that it's a hard age for kids and for parents, especially when we feel like we have limited ability to help them when we're at home and they're dealing with hardship at school or with their friends. But that's what these superpowers are designed to help us parents with as well, is make sure that we're giving our kids those skills that they need to be able in different scenarios, right?
Yes. And I'm hoping that reading the book will help parents sit with their own discomfort and recognize that all of these bumps that kids are experiencing, not only are they unavoidable, but they're actually beneficial if we can leverage them and use them to teach kids the skills that they need, not only in middle school, but after middle school. We actually are going to turn out stronger kids, more confident kids. Whereas if we're constantly jumping in and fixing everything for them, we deprive them of the opportunity to learn that they can handle the hard stuff, which whether they experience it under our roof or later, they are going to experience it at some point.
You know, you're a parenting expert. I am not. I host this podcast to hopefully learn as much as I can. And that has been the most consistent theme from the experts that I've really like taken to heart is we parents mean so well. And I know not everyone does this, but I absolutely try to protect my kids. And it is not in my nature. And to sit with the discomfort, I really like that phrase because that's what I have to remind myself to do each time. I don't need to fix. I need to be uncomfortable because me allowing them to be uncomfortable, and that's uncomfortable for me, is what's going to prepare them for the future. Let's talk about those superpowers. Can you talk about, I think it's 13 superpowers, right?
There's 12, yes.
12. Okay. There's 12 superpowers and we're not going to go through all of them, but I think some of them are really important to talk about specifically for girls. But when we talk about the superpowers, how did you pick these specific ones?
The 12 superpowers I chose, it's not that they're only important for middle schoolers. Obviously, everybody benefits if they're optimistic or if they're able to take risks or if they can be flexible. But I chose the 12 I chose because they are grounded in the developmental phase. So going back to the idea of girls in particular, we know that this is an age where their confidence drops and their confidence that other people likes them like them drops. And it's an age when that perfectionism tends to kick in. And it's an age when they're so desperate to avoid conflict with friends because their relationships are everything to them. And so some of the superpowers, like super daring or the ability to go out on a limb and take healthy risks, or super balance, which has to do with challenging some of that defeatist thinking and the perfectionism that can kick in, are really geared toward kids in this age group.
And as I read through, and I'm like, yes, yes, every single one makes sense, people. But there's so much value in reading it from your perspective on how we actually do that. Because again, I think the feelings that we naturally have as parents are not necessarily the ones that are appropriate to help our kid develop them. That's the thing. Like, we need the experts. So I think that super belonging is really important. And, you know, when I read super belonging, I think, okay, our kids need to find their place. And of course, in middle school, they do want to find their place. But there's so much more to it. And actually, you talk a lot about the moments where our kids don't feel super belonging in that chapter. Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
Yes. And the good news is that, and I tell this to kids all the time, every single kid in this age group is going to have some setbacks in the social realm in these years, whether a friend gossips about them, or somebody is mean to them, or they're dropped by a friend group, or they're in a completely different place in terms of their sophistication than a friend they've been friends with for a long time. So they're moving in different directions. Those hits are part of this phase. And the good news is that not only is it not personal, it's an opportunity for kids to learn a lot about themselves, including the fact that they're able to recover from these things when they happen. And so what we as parents can do is help them approach these problems in a way that doesn't shut them down or make them give up or make them think they're a loser. So a lot of the sample pieces of advice I give in that chapter relate to helping kids assume positive intent, that somebody didn't set out to hurt their feelings or exclude them from something, helping them figure out what small action step they can take when something goes wrong or something happens that makes them feel bad about themselves. It's about making them feel like they're not this passive victim of fate, that they are in the driver's seat, and that no matter how bad it feels, and it does feel bad, this is not about telling kids it doesn't feel bad. There's no question it's really, really hard. It's about helping them not get stuck in that moment, including if they are the one who makes a mistake or they're the one who's mean to someone else, helping them move forward productively.
Yeah, I think that our kids, you know, like when our kids have a social challenge, a friendship challenge, what I hear from moms is that they do go into fix mode because we want our kids to have friends, right? But many of us accidentally make our kids feel either we're saying, well, what did they do? What, you know, like the other person must have done something wrong, or what did you do to cause this? And that's actually not necessarily the case, right? Like, all of our kids are learning, and because of that, there's going to be some friction at some points.
Yeah. And we bring all of our own personal experiences and biases and sensitivities and assumptions to the table. And I promise you, the way we think about these social problems is totally different than the way that kids are thinking about it. I share a lot of examples in the book trying to prove to parents or to readers that whatever that worst case scenario is, when you actually ask kids why they behaved a certain way, more often than not, they can rationalize it and they actually think they were doing the right thing. And that's why they need a lot of coaching. It's why we have to approach them through questioning, asking them, you know, what was going through their head, not in a judgmental way, but, you know, tell me what you were thinking at the time, or, you know, what happened right before then, or what are you thinking about doing? Even asking if they'd like your help to think it through first can be really helpful so that you don't just jump in and try to solve it for them. Sometimes they just want to vent. If we're really reactive, they're not going to share what happened because they don't want to be criticized. They don't want you to say, oh, you shouldn't be friends with those people anymore. I actually share a story from a colleague, another school counselor, whose own child was in a group chat with some of their friends. And the friends decided to kick their child out of the group chat because they said that the kid had said something bad about a friend, and it wasn't true, at least according to that child. And the mother knew the parents of all of these other kids. And she talked to me about how not only did she want to text all of those other mothers and stick daggers in the eyes of the kids who are hurting her kid, she really had to exercise restraint because she knew that wasn't going to help her child. It also drove her crazy that the kid was trying so hard to get them to let them back in to the group chat. And she really knew that it would be more effective if they just took a break and took a step back. And she did share that perspective, but then she had to exercise some patience and let them work it through. And eventually it did resolve itself. And she knew better than to text the other parents, which only would have served to make the whole situation worse.
Yeah. And this, you highlighted, I think this is an area where us moms really struggle to separate our experiences from what our kid is going through in that moment. And it's helpful to know that even a school counselor struggles with it. You know, like there's the thing that we know to do sometimes, and then there's the feeling of what we want to do. And that totally highlights it.
Yeah. And you can completely, it doesn't matter what your job is, you can completely get hijacked, no matter how much you know intellectually that you should take a step back, that you should let them solve their own problems. And you sometimes need to put in some outside controls to keep yourself from making those kinds of sort of hasty decisions and jumping in, whether you call a friend or you talk to a partner, make an appointment with your therapist, talk to a religious leader, whatever you need to do to kind of get yourself into a calmer place. Talk to other parents whose kids are experiencing something similar just to normalize it for yourself. Some of the same things that work for kids work for parents too. And then we can approach it a bit more clear-headed.
I think that's really helpful. And it kind of directly ties into the next one I want to talk about, which is super healing. Can you tell me what super healing is? And I think sometimes that's one where us parents need to remind ourselves how to do that in order to help our kids through it as well.
So there's two superpowers that are somewhat interrelated, super vulnerability and super healing. Super vulnerability is about helping kids know when, know how, know who to ask for help when they need it. Super healing is about helping them cope with hard feelings, helping them develop a coping toolbox and figure out what strategies work for them in different situations. And so super vulnerability is so important because kids in this age group don't intuitively know to ask for help. If they do, they often just go to another friend. They have a really hard time. There's another superpower called super force field that's about setting boundaries, and they have a really hard time telling a friend that they're exhausted by their problems or that it's too much for them to handle. We started out talking about stamina. Their stamina is down in terms of supporting their friends too, because it's a lot going on in their own life. So super healing is about really drilling down to what they're feeling, when they're feeling those feelings, what they can do in those situations to make themselves feel better, sharing our own strategies as well, and really reinforcing for kids that there's no one magic strategy that's always going to work. The same strategy that works in one situation won't necessarily work in another. So if you're really upset about a fight with a friend and your way of dealing with it or coping with it is to call 10 other friends and rehash the whole thing, you could actually end up feeling a lot worse. But if you're sad because you're lonely, then calling up a bunch of friends could be a really good strategy. So one of the things I recommend is having kids track which strategies they're using in different situations. You can even have like a family popsicle stick jar where you write it on a blank popsicle stick on one side and then on the other side write when they use the strategy, and everybody can write their name so you can see what other family members have tried. But really the concept is that figuring out what works for you in a given moment is a bit like throwing spaghetti at the wall to see what sticks. We don't want kids giving up because they try one strategy and it's not successful. I see that a lot in the school setting with things like mindfulness. You are teaching kids one way of maybe relaxing their body or relaxing their thoughts in their mind so that they can feel more focused at school, and it doesn't work. And they say, oh, this mindfulness thing doesn't work for me at all. And it may not. And that's okay too, but we want them to keep an open mind and just keep experimenting. And we can do the same thing for them. We can tell them what we're trying. We can tell them if it worked. We can tell them if it didn't work and what we're trying instead. And we want to make sure we close the loop and come back and say, you know what? I went for a run. I feel better now. Or I called a friend. That was the right thing for me to do in this situation.
I like that. I have polar opposite personality children. One is like an extreme extrovert, and definitely what helps him when he's having a moment is completely different than my daughter. So it would be unreasonable for me to think that I could suggest something that works for me and that it's going to work for both of my kids, right? Letting them really discover for themselves and empowering them to say, hey, what worked for you? I like the popsicle stick. It's a simple way for our kids who aren't super expressive to us in voice, in conversation, they can write it down. We don't have to talk about it for 20 minutes and they have something to reference back. So I think that's a really good suggestion that is easy to implement at any age, really.
I think we want to really be giving kids self-coaching tools because they're so desperate at this age to be treated as more sophisticated and older and smarter and more mature than they are. One way to do that is to ask them advice about our own problems rather than constantly being the one suggesting things to them. That can be helpful. I actually have an app that came out today called Congruence, or the Congruence app. That's a self-coaching app for tweens and teens. And the idea behind it is that if it's voice activated, not every kid wants to journal or write about what they're trying. And this is my attempt at throwing spaghetti at the wall to see what sticks. Here's some other possibility. Girls I know are more likely to want to journal than boys, for instance. And if you have a kid who likes to write, they can keep a journal about how they feel before and after an activity or before and after they're on an app to see which ones work or don't work for them, having that kind of metacognition about their own well-being. And if they don't like to write, they can try talking into a phone, using an app, using some other method to really get them to think on their own about what does and doesn't work for them.
You said the app is Congruence?
It's called the Congruence app. It's actually in the App Store as of today.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, there's a lot of free modules too. So you can even go test it out and have your kids try it. It's based in some ways off the book. So, and I did it with another person named Dave Keeler, and there are modules on friendship and modules on self-regulation and modules on confidence. And it's a way for kids to vocalize what's going on in their internal life, brainstorm ways that they can move forward, and also at the same time, maybe get some background information about what it is they're experiencing and normalize it for them too.
I love this concept, and I think it's going to be super useful to a lot of kids and parents. And like, I've got great kids and we have good communication, but my daughter definitely responds better when she gets to learn something on her own. And then we discuss it. She's old enough, as you said, she wants to have some independence. She wants autonomy. She wants to be the one kind of in the driver's seat of her own life at this point, yet she still needs the guidance, right? So being able to explore different things like that about what worked for her and then talking to me about it is going to be much more useful. So I think that's a great concept and I'm super excited about it. And we'll make sure that there is a link to that app, the Congruence. What was the last word?
It's the Congruence app.
Like the Congruence app. We'll make sure there's a link to that in the show notes as well for everybody. And then you mentioned another one that I want to talk about, which is super daring. And I think super daring is especially important for our girls. I know it's important for all kids, but at this age, as you mentioned, self-confidence declines, perfectionism goes up. And I think that means daringness in our girls kind of tanks at this age. So talk to me about your super daring superpower.
You're right. This is an age when the risk of embarrassment can really get in the way of a kid doing something they want to do. The risk of conflict, potential conflict, or stepping on someone else's toes. If you have two girls and they both want the one position on student council, one of them might decide not to run because she doesn't want to get in the way of that friend or risk that friendship. And so kids really need a lot of support to continue to take those risks. And one of the misconceptions I think we as adults have, and I just had a conversation about this with a teen girl recently, is that what we consider a small social risk can be a huge social risk for a kid. And we might be really well-meaning and say, you've been on the soccer team with her for 5 weeks. You guys hang out at soccer every time. What's the big deal? Just invite her to go out to lunch after the game. I'll drive you there. And it seems so simple to us as adults. But for the kid, you have so many things that can get in the way, the worry that they won't want to come, that you might somehow by asking jeopardize the relationship that you do have, even if it's more of an acquaintanceship than a real friendship. You run the risk that they will say something that throws you off entirely and you'll lose the courage to talk to them going forward. So helping kids break it down into really small steps can help. I use the ladder analogy in the book. Draw a ladder. On each rung of the ladder is a different risk that they're taking. And if they still think it's, you know, a 10 on a scale of 1 to 10, break it down even more, add more rungs to that ladder until you really have some risks in that 4 to 7 range. And what we want is for them to be getting enough outside their comfort zone that they are building their competence and their confidence that they can do it, but not pushing them so hard or so fast that if it doesn't go well, they'll never try it again.
You spelled it out for us that us parents don't really understand. We have the benefit of hindsight, right? We were in middle school, so we can remember, and we think that it's not a big deal to ask a friend. And we remember ways that this worked out for us in the past, but we also have filters and we don't remember all of the details of every time we asked a new person out to go for lunch or invited someone to hang out at our house. And so respecting the reasons something might be super daring for our tween when it doesn't feel like it to us, I think is really important, because otherwise we're kind of missing the opportunity to help them get there, right?
Absolutely. The same is true for even raising your hand in class. Kids can either be avoidant or they can be perfectionists. There's lots of things they'll do to avoid dropping a notch in the eyes of the people who they want to respect them. And so we have to be helping them come up with comfortable risks. And we want to really celebrate the smallest, most incremental steps they're making toward their goal. In the book, I suggest setting brave goals or deciding what it is you want to accomplish. And one way parents can help is by having a conversation about what they're not getting by not taking that risk. So for instance, you might not be risking embarrassment if you don't raise your hand in class, but maybe the brave goal is because you really want your teacher to know how great your insights are. You want them to know you're smart and capable. And so if that's the basis for the brave goal, then you can break it down into small little steps along the way. And you want to make sure that you are celebrating each of those successes as they happen. Because in the same way that we forget what it was like to be a middle schooler, they don't yet have the perspective of knowing that nobody instantly is an expert at anything, that everything takes a lot of time and effort to master.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm super excited about this book, and I know it's going to help a lot of kids and their parents. Can you tell us where we can find more about your work and find the books online?
Sure. So the books are everywhere. Middle School Superpowers and Middle School Matters are both on Amazon and all the other websites that sell books. You can find me on social media. I'm at pfagel on most of the platforms, and I'm on LinkedIn. I have a website. It's www.phyllisfagel.com. That has my email if you want to reach out. And I am pretty responsive, so feel free to get in touch if you'd like to learn more about my work.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Phyllis.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Raising Middle School Girls podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more conversations with experts designed to help you support your middle school girl, please hit subscribe. You can also sign up for the newsletter at the link in the show notes to receive emails about tips and resources, upcoming events, and new podcast episodes, all designed to support you and your child.